Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to actually be here till noon like we always are every Saturday from 10 to noon. We're talking about car repair. Should I do this? Should I trade it in? What do you think about this kind of car? This is what the shop told me. Any of those kinds of things we can handle, we can help you. And it's kind of a give and take thing. We're going to introduce you on the air, and we're live on the air, and then we'll talk to you about your problem, and I'm going to ask questions, and you're going to answer them. And when you answer them, it's easy. It's yes, no, or I don't know. It's okay. A lot of times that happens. So if you'd like to join us, you can, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have five lines available. One of them's taken right now, and Jan called in early. So I'm going to take her right now. Jan, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. It's the man.
Oh, Jan, I'm sorry. and somebody was clicking in my headphone ears or at the radio station saying, Mark, it could be a man. So it's okay. Thank you, Jan. Thank you.
Yeah. I need some help. I've got a Ford F-150 pickup truck, small V8, and the air conditioning quit working on me. And I'm kind of puzzled everywhere I go. They want to sell me a kit, but my compressor is still working okay, and don't know quite what to do.
Let me ask you some questions.
I went to one place, the guy showed me... Okay, sure.
No, go ahead. You went to one place, and the guy showed you?
Pictures that he had taken. He wouldn't let me look at it, but he took pictures and showed me that there were several leaks, and the refrigerant had been gone, is gone. And he quoted me a price that didn't sound too reasonable to me, and so I'm kind of still looking around as to what I should do.
Maybe 1,100 plus or minus 300?
Way above that.
Okay. Well, you bring up some really good points. You evidently, it doesn't have enough Freon in it, and the low-pressure switch kicked off the power to the compressor. So as a technician, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to take the low-pressure switch and we're going to hot-wire that little booger, and we're going to turn the compressor on, and then we're going to take our hands and grab the suction line at the back of the compressor, which is the biggest, fattest metal line at the back, and we want it to be cold, and then the small one is going to be a whole lot warmer. And we're going to gauge that, and once we force the compressor on, then we're going to see what kind of air comes out of the center vent. But here's what something that bothers me. I'd like to know, is the compressor locked up or not?
As far as I know, it's still running.
Okay.
It's blowing.
Okay, but blowing doesn't count. I need you to look at the front of the compressor, and I need to have your wife or some friends of yours inside the cab, the engine's idling, and you turn the air on and off, and see if the front of the pulley moves with the on and off. So when you go on, the pulley spins as fast as the front, we call it the clutch. So the clutch engages and the whole front of the compressor is spinning. And so when you turn it off, then the pulley continues to rotate, but the clutch disengages. This is pretty basic stuff for the repair shop, but if everyone's wanting to sell you a kit, I'm thinking to myself, the compressor's grenaded. And it sent metal throughout the entire system. So we need an accumulator. We need a compressor. We need an orifice tube. We're going to flush the heck out of everything and then try to put all this back together. And then it's going to be north of $1,500. So I don't know what they're seeing, but I think it's okay to get a second opinion. Or you can go back to them and say, I want you to give me a specific estimate for what you're going to do and tell me why.
Okay. I live in the West Valley. You recommend anybody? Way?
38th Avenue and Indian School, Harker's Automotive. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Harker's with an H. H-A-R-K-E-R.
Oh,
yeah, Harker.
Okay.
I mean, they're really good at what they do. They're an honest family operation. Bob and his nephew are in the shop, and the two of them know more about cars than I do. And they're really good at what they do, and the question is going to be, is what do we need? You bring up a great point. This is a great way to introduce the show. There are a lot of, in Mark Salem's opinion, there's just lots of shops that just go for the throat, or I can reword it. They're going to assume the worst and bid the worst, and you'll never know if you needed the worst. I want to tell you unequivocally that many times a year, maybe once a month, twice a month, or more, we'll see a car, and it'll come in with an air conditioning issue, and we'll find that it's out of Freon and it's got a leak over here. So we bid the leak repair and a new load of Freon, and it could easily be anywhere from $500 to $800, depending on where the leak's at. If it's underneath the dash, it's going to be the big dog. If it's the condenser at the front of the radiator, it's going to be a big dog. But if it's a connection and the O-ring's bad, and all we got to do is take the connection apart, put a new O-ring, put a little bit of refrigerant oil on it, and put it back together, we're done. So, or it's a Schrader valve where we actually input the Freon into the car. So there's a lot of times that we find that the estimate was, I don't really know what's the matter with this, so I'm going to give him a really big estimate, knowing full well I can fix it for what I'm estimating for. But you're also going to pay from $100 to $200 to have somebody specifically diagnose it, because there's going to be a good amount of work. Do we have power to the compressor? Is the compressor coming on? Is the compressor working? Those are the questions that have to be answered before anybody can intelligently guess or intelligently give you an estimate and know that the estimate's good. How wide was the parameters on the estimate you got?
2,000.
Okay. That's real. That's pretty damn wide.
That answers my question.
$2,000 is going to be, there are three major components. The accumulator, which is the filter assembly, is underneath the dash. You have the compressor that's underneath the dash. Then underneath the dash inside the car is the evaporator. And the evaporator is what gets cold, and then the fan is behind the evaporator. So the evaporator could leak Freon. The accumulator could be plugged up with oil, with trash. The compressor could have gone to compressor heaven. And then in front of the radiator, we have a condenser. And the condenser's job is as we send refrigerant into the condenser, it's hot, and we're going to cool it off, and we're going to take some of the heat away and send it back into the system. So then your question to Mark is, how often do you have to replace all four of those? Compressor, accumulate, go five. Orifice tube, which controls the flow of Freon, the evaporator, and the condenser. And the answer is maybe once every 3 or 4 years do we do all of that. And we do a lot of air conditioning work. So I'm just a little concerned with the off-the-hip estimate on your car. And I think it would be good to say to Harkers, my air conditioning is not working. I want you to do, how much is it going to cost to have you determine the repair? And I can't quote their prices, but it's going to be between $100 and $200 because I'm thinking it's an hour to 2 hours to just track it down. Then now we know exactly what the problem is, and we know if it'll hold refrigerant, and we know if the compressor's bad, and we know if the accumulator's bad, and we know if the condenser's bad. So the orifice tube meters the flow of refrigerant. So the orifice tube is an important consideration. You know how much the orifice tube costs? $30. So
interesting.
And the orifice tube is within one of the lines. So you take a couple of big wrenches and you open up this connection and you separate them. You use this tool to go in this hole, grab a hold of the orifice tube, pull it out. It's a little torpedo that looks like a it's about the size of a cigarette. About the size of a cigarette. Then you look at it. It's got a bunch of metal in it. I know I need to do the accumulator now. I put in a new orifice tube. I put a new accumulator in it. I flush it all out. Boom, I'm done. After I fix the original problem. So that's kind of where you're at.
All right. Well, I didn't know where to go and what to do, and so I really appreciate your help with this.
Don't tell them what your estimate is. Don't tell them you already got a $2,000 in your pocket. But you have to have everything wrong to be in the $2,000 mark. That includes everything. We're going to replace every single component except the controller on your dashboard. That's what $2,000 is.
Why do you think I'm calling you?
Yeah, I would really appreciate it if at the end of the day, if you would take a picture, maybe email me a picture of your final invoice, because I'd like to know what they did.
And, well, they didn't do anything. Oh, in terms of inspection is what you want.
Well,
I don't have that.
When you get it fixed.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. When you get it fixed, send me a picture of your repair order. And
okay.
And then I think we'll both have a better idea on whether 2000 is just shooting from the hip. You know what I mean? It's, if you would have called me and said, hey, I got a Ford F-150 and I what's the worst case scenario on an air conditioning failure, malfunction, not working? I'm going to say 2000. That's what I'm going to say. I'm going to do everything for $2,000.
I was suspicious of that when the guy talked to me about it. And that's why I haven't done anything at this point. And I did want to go to somebody who knew what they were doing, and I didn't know anybody in the air conditioning world. So
okay.
That's why I called you.
And what year's your F-150?
Appreciate your help.
Okay. What year's your
F-150? Oh, it's 2000.
Okay. Okay.
And I have 300 miles on it.
300,000 miles on it? Okay.
320, yeah.
Okay. Have you ever had air conditioning work done to it since you've owned it?
Since I've owned that car, I've had very little mechanical problems.
Okay.
I had to put in an ABS deal with my brake system last year.
Okay.
And then this is the next worst thing that's happened to me in 23 years.
Okay. Well, and I'll tell you what I'll tell you, and I'm, and I, this is, you can take this to the bank.
1 minute.
Somebody looks at your 23-year-old truck with 300,000 miles on it, and if they ask you, have you had any air conditioning work done on this, and you say no, I'm bidding the $2,000 myself, if that's all you want, because 330,000 miles on a 23-year-old truck, and you've never had air conditioning work done on it, I'm bidding the whole enchilada. And so, but our industry is capable of being more specific. Good luck to you, Jan. Good luck to you. All righty. When we talk about car repair, it's easy. And you'll notice with myself and Jan, it's a give and take. I ask questions, he gives me answers. And when I ask you to answer a question, there are three valid answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. It's okay. So that's how it is. So if you have a vibration in your car, if you have a problem with your car, maybe you and your wife are fighting about what kind of car you're going to buy next. Those are all things that we can talk about. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And then we had talked about Larry Harker's Auto. Been around since 67. I've known Bob and Alan for many, many years. And they are a really top-notch, quality, honest shop. And when it gets down to Bob and Alan, who own Larry Harker's Auto, when it gets down to Bob and I, we're both about the same age. We both have the same amount of time in the industry. So I'm not sending Jan to somebody who was born yesterday. Bob's been around the block, and he's done lots of AC work, and he's certainly capable. On a 1 to 10 scale for us old guys, this job's about a 3.5 or a 4. That's all there is. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and if you'd like to join us, it's easy. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. We're going to talk about your car, your truck, your problem. I'm going to ask you questions. You're going to answer me. And together, we're going to kind of hone in on what it is that you should do next. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, and I've been a master, which means there's 8 automotive tests, and I've passed all 8 of them, so then therefore I can call myself a master. And I've been a master since 1991, and I was first certified in the auto repair ASE certification probably 10 years before that. So it took me a while to pass all 8 tests, but it's something that's worth it, and it certainly allows me a broad range of opinions on different cars and trucks. 602-508-0960. Ed, good morning. Thanks for holding. How can I help you?
Well, I called you last week. I had a coolant temperature gauge that was resting on 0, all right, full cold, and you told me how to test the sender, okay?
Okay.
So what we did was we shorted out the, disconnected the lead sender, shorted it, and the gauge went to full hot.
Okay.
Which it should, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's going to swing. Stop. For everybody else, it can start disconnected. It can be hot and swing to cold, and then sometimes disconnected, it's at cold and it swings to hot. All we want to do is see the other end of the spectrum. That's all.
Right. So have we eliminated the problem with the gauge?
Yeah. Didn't you see this gauge go from cold to hot?
Yes.
Okay, so
yes.
So
all right.
The gauge is fine.
Okay, next phase, I go to for a Motocraft sender, all right?
Okay.
Installed it, and I've got no reaction.
Well,
the engine is hot. I know that.
How do you know that?
I warm up the engine. I drive it around, and the gauge stays on cold.
Well, if
it doesn't register anything.
If the thermostat's stuck wide open, it's going to do that.
Well, I put my fingers on the head, and I know that it's at least 150 degrees.
Okay, but
I know that.
What we're doing here is we're not making any progress at all, because your fingers on your head mean nothing to me. Nothing. I don't. If you said, Mark, if you put your fingers on the head, you'd know that it was fully warmed up. I would say, no, I wouldn't. And besides, the head's a big piece of iron. You're just going to need some help with this, but the next thing I'll guess for you, the next thing would be, is if there is a thermostat in there, it's stuck wide open, and take the cap off the radiator, not the coolant overflow, the radiator. Start the car up, bring the idle up, look down inside, and you should see the water ripple, but you shouldn't see it moving. If it's moving, either the thermostat is gone or it's wide open, and it shouldn't be. That's your next test.
Okay. All right. Well, just for the heck of it, I did some experimentation with an ohmmeter on the
we're not going there. Sorry. I'm sorry. Your ohmmeter doesn't have a part in this repair, okay? I would never use an ohmmeter, and all we're going to do is talk about hypotheses and stuff like that, Ed. That's not going to put us over the goal line. So I don't know. This is so simple. You're going to spend so much more time on this. Some old guys, I mean, this is a 15- or 20-minute diagnosis. But I just can't walk you through it, but I gave you your next step. Your next step is the water flowing when it's cold, and when you start it up and hold the idle up, look inside the radiator and see if the water is moving on a rapid basis, then there is no thermostat or it's stuck wide open. That's your next step. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, then I can help you. I can help you real well. When it comes to diesels, though, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is an A-plus shop. Nate knows more about the Chevy, the Dodge, the Ford diesel than anybody I know. He's really, really good, and the name of his shop says it all, Strictly Diesel. So they do service and repair, and they also do foreign and domestic light-duty diesels, but they sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. But what they really are good at is, this is what my diesel's doing. Would you tell me what the repair is going to be? So diagnosing the problem, verifying the problem, diagnosing the problem, bidding the repair, both parts and labor, including shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax, and then talking to the customer. That's what Nate's all about. So he gets lots of calls, as we all do, from people who want us to diagnose the car over the phone. And he wants to remind me, and we do diesel work too, but we're across the world from him. The fact of the matter is this is not something that we can discuss over the phone, and I can tell you how to fix your car over the phone. There are tests that need to be ran, and we need to look at serial stream data in your computer, and we have to have an appropriate device in order to get that information. And of course, we can't do that over the phone. So if you have a 68 Camaro and you've got a no start problem, I can probably walk you through that whole thing, spark or fuel or compression, and I can probably do that in a period of 30 to 40 minutes, but that's not really what's best for you. What's best for you is find somebody to help you. So if you have a diesel problem, no matter where it's at, then it's worth a call to Nate and say, this is what I've got. This is the problem I've got. Is it something you fixed before, found and fixed before? And that's how the conversation starts. 602-508-0960. And Gil, we have one. Who might that be?
Say hello to Julie.
Julie, good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am.
So I I have got a 2017 Hyundai Tucson with a DVT transmission.
Okay.
The dual clutch transmission.
Yeah.
The transmission has, so it died this past weekend. We had it towed to the dealer. The dealer is telling us that we need a new transmission for $5,200. The car only has 76,000. I'm nervous.
It's okay. It's okay.
Did I say, so it was for $5,200. Car only has 75,000 miles on it. From what I've read, it's a known problem to Hyundai. They recalled the year before ours. I've been calling around and have been told that the whole transmission does not need to be replaced, that the actuator, the clutch, and the fork needs to be replaced.
Okay.
The car is not drivable.
Okay. 1 minute. Hold on. What they're saying is if they're bidding this repair with this, then that probably will fix it, we think. But our industry has a bad habit of wanting to be everybody's hero on the telephone. And the real question is somebody has to know exactly what's wrong, and then they can decide whether we can patch this. And I would imagine that there's a better than even chance that we can patch a 75,000-mile transmission. So I'm of agreement there. The shops that you've talked to, they have to work on transmissions exclusively. This is not a repair for a general repair shop that does oil changes to cooling system flushes. This is not a repair for them. This takes specific tools and expertise. So I've only got 5 seconds. I'm going to ask you to hang on, and I'm going to talk to you on the other side of this break. So please stay there. 602-508-0960, and we'll be back. 35 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're talking to Julie, and Julie's got a Tucson with a constant velocity transmission and a CVT transmission. What that means to the world is it doesn't have a bunch of gears like a manual transmission has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, or an automatic transmission may have 1, 2, 3, or 1, 2, 3, 4, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then lock up. So there's all this stuff going on. But Julie, are you still on the phone with us?
I am.
Okay. Julie, let me tell you, you're going to have to spend some time. No one's going to be able to diagnose it, and no one's going to be able to give you a price other than, and you can't count that price is going to cover the repair that you're likely to have. The good thing is you got 75,000 miles on it. That's the good part. Finding a shop, I would suggest that you go on the internet. Another thing you could do too is, call a couple of the auto parts store in the general area that you live and ask them if they know a shop that fixes CVT transmissions. The okay. Auto parts guys know who pays their bill, who when they order a part, there's two kinds of shops. You order a part, you try it, it doesn't fix the car, you put it back in the box and you send it back to the parts store. Okay? And they all know who that is. They know who does that. And so you're saying who pays their bill on time, who has the old grizzly-haired guys that work there that know transmission's really good, or is there a specific import shop? But there's lots of import shops as well in the area that you're likely to be that would be able to handle it. But the default's always going to be, Julie, I don't know what's wrong with it. It's going to take some diagnostic money to figure out what's wrong with it, and then I'll put together a bid and I'll call you. But, Julie, I want you to hear that this is a $6,000 transmission. Worst-case scenario is $6,000, and I've got sales tax, fluids, all the labor, all the diagnosis in that $6,000. It'll be $6,000 or less. That's what you really want to hear from somebody. You want to hear that, and that's the truth. So you're just going to have to find a good shop. I don't have anybody to tell you. What part of town do you live in?
I'm out in Buckeye. And okay. The problem is I can't go from shop to shop for diagnosis. The car's not running.
Right, right.
So it's got to be towed wherever I want the diagnosis done.
Okay. I'll tell you, and I understand your dilemma completely. And this could be something very simple as well. I don't have anybody out in the Buckeye area that I can, but I would like very much if you would do this. Do you have a pencil and paper handy?
I do.
Mark with a K at marksalem.com. Mark at marksalem.com. Send me your name and your phone number and give me the information on your car. Again, I think it's, you said it was a 17 Tucson CVT with 50 or 75,000 miles on it, but. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to call two transmission guys I know. That one's up on the North I-17, which is across the world from you, and the other one's in Tempe. And I'm going to talk to them about your car. And I'm going to ask them who in the west side is a good shop to send her to. That's the best I can do.
That would be awesome.
Okay. I'm happy to do that. Okay?
I appreciate it. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All righty. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing is in Mesa. Brian and Thelma work hand in hand. Actually, Brian works for Thelma because she is the taskmaster. But between the two of them, you have the guy that handles the nuts and the bolts and the shops and the technicians and the parts and all that kind of stuff. And then you have Thelma, who handles all the bill, the payroll, and she handles the front counter. They've been in Mesa since 1970. It's the only shop in Mesa that can pass the muster, that can get above the bar that I have set for shops that I talk nice about. So Thompson's has been around a very long time. I have to tell you, when you meet Brian and Thelma, you'll understand completely why I think they can handle Mesa just fine. They're really good people. They've been around the block. And you just meet them, shake their hands, and you'll understand that they're honest as the day is long. And they're very good at what they do as well. So that's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. The lines are open. 602-508-0960. Gil, the lines are open, right?
They are open.
Yeah, all five of them. So if you want to give us a call, you can. We're going to be here for another hour and 20 minutes because we wrap up the show about noontime. Folks, I understand the diagnostic process is difficult.
One minute.
But what's really difficult is it's not fair for you to think that anybody's going to be able to diagnose your car over the telephone without doing some testing. On the CVT, we have to check fluids. We have to look at the computer and say, hey, you got any heartburn? Do you have any codes? Do you have any problems? And the computer says, yeah, I have three codes. And I look at them and I go, and this is hypothetical. I look at them and they're all pressure codes. So it means, well, we're not building enough pressure to move this car down the road. Well, then I start looking at level of fluid. And then all of a sudden I find out that it's a quart low or 2 quarts low, and I put fluid in it, and then all of a sudden things change dramatically. That's how it works. The diagnostic process has to do with you understanding how the alternator works, the air conditioning works, the transmission works, the brakes work, understanding. And when the brake pedal goes to the floor, then you have to figure out what's going on. So I'll give you a good example, the brake pedal going to the floor. When I come to a traffic light, Mark, my brake pedal, I put my foot on it, and I stop. But then I feel the pedal just kind of fade away and go towards the floor, and I stay with the pedal, because if I don't, and if I hold the pedal in one position, then the car will start rolling. It sounds like you have a master cylinder that's bypassing internally, but you could have an external leak. So I have to first look at the brake fluid in the master cylinder. Then I have to check all the different connections to make sure that none of them are leaking. And then I'm probably going to go ahead and just take the master cylinder and separate it from the rest of the system. I'm going to run a pressure test on it and see if it holds. And if it doesn't, the master cylinder's bad. And if it does hold, if it doesn't hold pressure, the master cylinder is bad. And if it does hold, then I've got a leak downstream. That's how it goes. This is how we're supposed to work. And truthfully, 75% of the shops out there that have been in business more than 10 years, they already know that. So 602-508-0960, we'll be right back. Julie, if you're still listening to the show, I've thought of something else. Automatic Transmission Exchange is on 40th Street in Washington, so it's on the east side of Central Avenue, but it's horizontally and due east of you. I'm going to call Phil in the morning and ask him if he knows that CVT in your Tucson. And if he doesn't, then I'm going to ask him who he would send. And of course, you're going to send me an email and I'll give you that information as well. So I don't know. It's kind of a specialty. Those constant velocity transmissions, CVT transmissions, they're just a completely different animal. And there's enough of them out there, and their life isn't that as long as some of the other, you know, 4 and 5 speed automatics is. But there's just not enough out there for the the market to be saturated with people who work on CVT transmissions. So I'll work hard on that. 602, I'll get it right. I'm looking at all kinds of things in front of me. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. All five lines are wide open. If you have a car question or a car problem, or if you want me to settle an argument between you and your husband or the two brothers or between you and the auto parts store or whatever, whatever, then give us a call. 602-508-0960. The most important thing that our relationship between shop owner me and customer you is that at the end of the day, everything I told you, everything I said I would do, is in writing on my work order. Many of you will find that the work order says repair air conditioning, labor, $1,650, parts, $1,310, and that's it. That's not a very good idea for you to accept that kind of a repair order, because if there's a problem, the shop says, well, wait a minute, what failed is the electric cooling fans. And we didn't install the electric cooling fans. Well, I know, but you just did the work a week ago, and I've got the same problem now. Is it possible you misdiagnosed it? No, I didn't misdiagnose it. That's why you have to put everything in writing and make sure that they do a good job with your repair order and tell you exactly what happened. And most of us already do. We write down exactly what you say on the work order. You say exactly, it has a CVT transmission and it doesn't move. It doesn't move when it's hot. It doesn't move when it's cold. It doesn't move when you rev it up. It doesn't move. The only way to get it to move from point A to point B is push it. That's the kind of conversation you're going to have with the shop. So those are the important hints with respect to talking to the shop. And what we really like is we like somebody that walks in with a note that they've typed up or an email that they've printed, and they're handing it to us, and it has all the information on it. Here's my name, here's my phone number, here's my address, car's out front, here's the keys, here's the problem I've got. This is when it happens, this is how to make it happen. It's related to this or this or this. Call me with an estimate. And that's how it is. The only thing that's missing in that conversation is the diagnostic process. I would suggest that you put down if the diagnostic process is going to be more than $50 to find it and then bid it. Call me. So give them some kind of a number. $50 to $100 is going to be the number. But if you ask for that number, some shops will say, I can't possibly give you a diagnostic charge because I don't know how long it's going to take for me to fix it. I suggest to you that if the shop is seasoned, they'll be able to figure out a transmission problem in X amount of time, an air conditioning problem in X amount of time, the car falls on its face at idle and it idles rough in X amount of time. So typically you can say to them, well, there has to be some kind of a umbrella that covers my car intermittently idles really poorly and the check engine light flashes. Yes, ma'am, that there is. So, and then they're going to go into their computer and they're going to figure my labor rate, and I'm using round figures here because I'm terrible in math. My labor rate's $100, so I'm going to say, yes, ma'am, it shouldn't take me more than $25 to $50 to find it. Basically, I'm saying within a quarter of an hour to a half an hour, I should be able to diagnose your car. That's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, and who might we have on the phone?
Say good morning to Kurt.
Kurt, good morning.
Good morning. I have an 81 F-150, two-wheel drive, 3.9 liter. I had some ongoing brake issues that I cannot resolve. I replaced basically everything in the system except for the proportioning valve. And I still get, I'm still having troubles with, like, the, if I brake at a stop sign pretty hard, the back left tire will lock up, and then I still get quite a bit of vibration with the front when I'm braking hard. So that's where I'm at.
Wow.
And I mean, I've replaced the booster, the master cylinder, both new calipers, new brake hoses on the front, going to the brake lines, rotors are brand new, and brake shoes are new.
How about wheel cylinders or calipers?
Yeah. I just replaced with new brake pads.
Okay, did you replace the calipers or the wheel cylinders yet?
The wheel cylinders, as far as the on the rear for the drums?
Yes.
No, I have not replaced those.
Okay. Have you replaced the calipers in the front?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, you know you spent three times as much money as anybody in town that would have charged you to diagnose it, right?
Oh, well, some of it needed to happen anyway. Okay. I mean, the calipers were, I mean, probably as old as the truck, 81. The brake hoses were actually leaking. So some of the stuff I had to do, and the rotors were totally warped. Okay. So that had to happen, so I did that on my own.
Okay. Okay. Well, let me comment on what you said, okay? First of all, the proportioning valve itself is easy to test, and all you're going to do is just go do a panic stop on a pavement parking lot behind the Safeway tomorrow morning. That's it. Just go do a panic stop. The front should lay down about twice as much skid as the back do, and the proportioning valve just proportions the pressure to the front and the rear, and we need 60% of the pressure to the front, 40% of the pressure to the rear, and all the skid marks should be the same length. But when you start talking about that you're replacing all those components, all those components that you've replaced have a specific symptom. So when you start going through and you have all of this, what I hear you saying to me is I've replaced everything in the brake system and I still drag one of the tires when I come to a stop. Is that right?
Correct. But that's, just to back up a little, that's not the reason I replaced the booster and the master cylinder. They were shot. The booster was leaking and the master cylinder was also leaking. So that's why those guys got swapped out.
What was the symptom for that? What was the symptom for that?
For the booster?
Yeah, you said the booster was leaking and the master was leaking. So what was the symptom? I mean, how, tell me.
The booster actually, where the fitting, where the line goes into the actual booster itself, it was worn out to the point where it was allowing too much vacuum release. I'd press on the pedal and it would just be, it's like you could hear air coming out.
Vacuum line to the booster can. Line to the booster can. Was the pedal soft and go to the floor, or was it rock hard?
Yeah, it was soft. I'd actually have to pump it.
Okay. So when you did the master cylinder and the booster, did that fix it?
Oh, totally. Yeah, it was good for about a year. And then it just basically started this with the left tire locking up.
Okay. You know, I'm going to make a good suggestion to you. If you're going to take this to a shop, don't you tell them the story you just told me, because nobody's going to want this thing. Because there's so much wrong here. The master cylinder, if it's leaking at the back, it contaminates the diaphragm and the booster, and your brake pedal gets rock hard and it doesn't get better. So if you don't have a rock hard brake pedal, and if you don't have a master cylinder leaking out the back, and you're saying that you've got a leak where the vacuum line goes into the booster, that's called a $10 grommet. So there's...
Okay, well, I had that. I replaced that, though.
I understand, but what I'm saying is that vacuum leak would have caused a check engine light, because the engine's running lean because it's got a vacuum leak. It's sucking a lot more air than it should. So we should have had a check engine light, and then if you're leaking vacuum at the booster, then your pedals rock hard all the time, and that doesn't come and go. It's all the time. You're not supplying the booster with the proper engine vacuum, 16 to 18 inches of vacuum, because you're leaking out of the fitting. So if you're leaking out of the fitting, that 16 to 18 inches goes down to 5 and 6, and at that point we have a rock hard brake pedal 100% of the time. So I'm trying to help you and guide you, but be careful what you say. I think what you need to do is just find a shop and take it to them and say, this is the specific problem I want you to address, and I can demonstrate it right now in your parking lot. So if you want to just stand right there, I'm going to drive this way at about 10, 15 miles an hour. I'm going to kind of climb on the brakes kind of hard, and it's going to drag that left rear tire. I want you to find out why that is. But the proportioning valve proportions from front to back. Front to back, not side to side. So you got a big problem with this proportioning valve idea, because the proportioning valve is 60% of the brake pressure goes to the front, 40% of the brake pressure goes to the back. So it's not going to be a brake pedal problem. It's going to probably be something in the brake assembly that perhaps maybe the hardware kit wasn't installed correctly, and so when we apply the brakes, we swell the top part of the shoes that clamps inside the drum, and at that particular point, we better have that bar across the bottom in the right position. And the bar has to be there, and it has to be in the right position. If it's not, then oftentimes it'll lock up the brake on one side or the other. So you might want to compare one side to the other.
Oh.
And see if you see if you see anything different. But really and truly, don't you've spent so much money. This at the very beginning was a $70, $75, maybe $80 diagnosis at the very beginning. So you know, you could have taken it to a shop and said, you diagnosed it, and then I want to go fix it. People do that to us all the time, and we're happy to oblige them. It puts a little pressure on us because we better hit it right. So if they go do a booster and a master, and we tell them that's bad, and they come back and say, oh, it's still doing it, we got egg on our face, and we're going to have to probably fix that car for free in my shop. I'm not speaking for the industry. But that's kind of how it is.
Oh, right. Well,
so what part of town do you live in?
A surprise.
Okay. Oh, give me major cross streets.
Oh, Grand and Reams.
Okay. You're going to probably have to come into town, and the closest one would be Harker's, 38th Avenue and Indian School. I got a couple of shops on the 16th Street side, got a couple shops on the 7th Street side. I got Billy at 20th Street Auto, Indian School on 20th Street. So, I got guys all over. If you go to marksalem.com, my website, all the shops that I recommend are there. So you could take a look and take it there. But marksalem.com, M-A-R-K, and Salem like the cigarette, S-A-L-E-M. And that's how you say click on the best car repair shops link, and then you can find somebody there. And you can tell them, and this is a joke now. It's a joke. You say, I talked to Mark, and he's going to send me a coupon over for 50% off. So I just want to tell you I want to use that. And they'll go in, they'll laugh hysterically and say, has he been drinking lately? And you say no, okay? So it's just a okay. joke. It's a nice way to introduce you. I don't make a commission on your ticket. I don't take any money for your ticket. I'm not a bird dog fee kind of guy. If I send you there, the relationship's between you and him, and he's not going to give me any money or tip me for sending you there. I don't do that, okay? All righty. Good luck to you, Kurt.
Oh,
thank you very
good.
Much. 602-508-0960. We're going to take a break here in a few minutes, and then we're going to come back for another hour. So we have five lines open, and if you'd like one of them, now's the time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. It should be no secret that a shop owner's, it's difficult for us to reconstruct a problem when you worked on this for 6 months and you've done a lot of work to it. We know that we're going to find multiple things wrong with it, and we're going to kind of have to unwind the whole thing. It's not that we're going to purposely take a bunch of money away from you. That's not it. It's just going to be, we're going to have to attack the symptoms one at a time. So if the brake pedal is slowly fading to the floor, we are going to look at the master cylinder, we're going to look for leaks, and we're going to look at the booster, the power brake booster, we'll call it that, so that you know what it is. By the same token, if you have a drivability concern and you only have a miss on Thursday mornings at 10 a.m., and the engine misses and the check engine light flashes, then we need to have it during that period of time. So those are the kinds of things that the more information you give us, not guesses, not what Google said on the internet, just answer our questions, and a good shop is going to ask you a lot, and you'll know at that point that they know what they're doing. 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car problem and you want to discuss it on the radio with me, then here's how you do it. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Action Auto Repair's up at I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom and I have been friends, and I respect him as I do all the shop owners I talk about since 1983. He knows what he's doing. He's honest as the day is long. And he has the ability, like many of us do, of being able to separate truth from fiction from when it comes out of the mouth of our technicians. Not that that happens a lot, but it does happen once or twice or three times a year. So if you're anywhere near I-17 and Deer Valley Road and you're looking for a good shop, the northwest corner, I-17 and Deer Valley, is Action Auto. Bruce, good morning. How can I help you? Bruce, I can't hear you.
Okay, I guess we'll go to Ray.
Yeah, let's put Bruce on hold. He may be. Anyway, and Ray, I'll go to you real quick. Ray, how are you today? What can I do for you?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to describe to you, I have a 2004 Subaru Forester, and this was back, oh gosh, 7-8 years ago, that I had a problem with the air conditioning before I knew of your show to call up and ask for your opinion.
Okay.
So I want to describe to you the problem and then how I was able to resolve the air conditioning problem and get your opinion on that, and then also if it happens in the future, what might do.
Okay.
So the air conditioning would turn it on, I wouldn't get any cold air. Okay. And so I did pictures and I found a YouTube video that said when you take and open up the hood and you look at the clutch of the engine and the clutch plate for the air conditioning, that your clutch plate over time has, I'll say that there's more tolerance in the clutch plate, so it isn't, when you turn the air conditioning on, it isn't connecting to the engine clutch plate and then turning the condenser and getting the air conditioning to work.
Okay, stop. It's called drive and driven pulleys, okay? So drive and driven. Otherwise, you got one that's running all the time, but when you engage the clutch, then we magnetically suck the two of them together, and we start driving your air conditioning system. So I just don't want anybody to hear what you're saying. I need to give them the more technical aspect. But continue on, please.
You know, I'm glad you're correcting me, because, boy, I'm not an auto mechanic expert. So if I'm saying some of the wrong parts, yeah, interrupt me and go ahead and do that.
No problem.
Because other people hear it. So what the suggested fix on that was, or way to try and get it to work, was to take, and at that time in the grocery store, when you bought vegetables or fruits, you had the little green ties that were small pieces of wire. And this particular person said, take the wire, and if I remember correctly, because I'm not in front of the car, but on one of those parts, there's like four or five spokes, I'm going to say, and by putting in between spokes, it was able to cut down the, decrease the tolerance between the two plates, and then it connected. So, and it's worked ever since. I had to play around with it a little bit so that it wasn't correcting it too much, so that clutch plate, or I'm not clutch, but that the two pieces were coming together all the time, and it only would, you know, it only would engage when I turned the air conditioning on. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, does that,
okay,
you know, it works. It's worked for 7-8 years. But if this happens again, what else would I want to be looking at?
Okay. Folks, what he's talking about is the front of your air conditioning compressor has a belt on it. And so it's spinning all the time. But the compressor's not spinning. Where the pulley is at, there is two things. There's the pulley that's spinning, and then there's the clutch that's stationary. When you turn your air conditioning on, we magnetically energize the backside of that pulley, and it pulls up that outer portion called the hub assembly, and it pulls the hub into the moving pulley, and your air conditioning works. What he's talking about is that it's called an air gap, and the hub assembly itself has a spring to it, so it takes up, if a normal spark plug gap is like 30 thousandths, a piece of paper is like 5 thousandths. So if you put 10 pieces of paper on top of one another, that's the air gap. It's not too much. What's happening in his is a simple adjustment would have taken care of this, because you would have just taken the pulley off the front and taken one of the shims out and put it back in, and you would have been up, you know, been good. But the wire tie issue I've never heard before, but I understand completely. By him putting it in behind one of the arms that holds the clutch together, then he was able to get it to activate. But another problem he's going to have is over time it's going to create abnormal wear, because there's going to be more tension at one end, one third of the hub, as opposed to the other two thirds of the hub, and that may cause him problems. in your particular case, if it's worked for 10 years, then I would just leave it alone. But it, in the next time, you just describe to the shop that it doesn't always engage the pulley. The front, which is the hub, doesn't always magnetize itself to the rolling and moving pulley on the air conditioning compressor. And there's ways that we can adjust that with shims by taking the hub off, and it takes a special tool to take the hub off and either add or subtract washers and then put it back together. And some of us old-time guys will take the hub off, take it over to the bench, look around, nobody's seeing us, and we'll take a little hammer and we'll tick, 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 and we'll just bend those arms just a little bit, put it back on, and everything's done. So to answer your question, you did a good job, and obviously it worked. I'm not a fan of doing Google stuff like that. I was scared you were going to use that wire on the electrical connection that that magnetizes the clutch assembly, and so I was going to stop you. But obviously it worked, and I understand what you're saying, but unfortunately you and I are the only two that probably understand what you're talking about.
And what I did, I when you make the comment about that it could wear on one side more than the other, what I did do is I think you described it as three. I did put wire, the same wire, under all of those.
Okay.
Then, so hopefully not off center whatever.
Now, the wire on a loaf of bread is significantly less thick than a piece of wire that's wrapped in rubber insulation, like a 10-gauge wire or a 12-gauge wire or 14-gauge wire or 16-gauge wire. So we need to make sure that we know that we're talking about a piece of wire that ties your bread together. So that's an important consideration. Anything bigger than that would have caused the clutch to overheat and probably burn out within the first hour of driving because it would have been too close, too thick, too fat. So it's not really an approved repair, but I understand you did a good job of describing it. So anyway, thank you very much for that. Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I know that many of you would really love to talk to the technician that's working on your car. And you're confounded on how to do that. And the answer is so simple. You have the ability to sit down in front of your computer and type a note to the technician that's going to get your car, and you're going to just leave it on the dashboard. That's all you're going to do. If you want to talk to the technician, if you want to tell him your story, if you want him to look at this, look at that, do this, do that, just recognize that every single issue you put down, there's going to be a checkout charge on it. So if they have a $45 checkout charge and you ask them to check this, check that, five different things, you're already in the couple hundred dollars there. So just beware. But if you have a particular problem and you want to describe how to make it happen and you want to talk to the technician about that, and at the end of the note, it's okay to say, here's my cell phone number. I work every day, and you can call me, but we can't have a long conversation. And if you have a quick question, then give me a call, and I'll answer it. So that puts the technician with you. Technicians like that, but the fact that they don't call you doesn't mean that they don't like you. It just means that the repair is an easy one to make, and they've already seen what you're talking about. They already understand the verbiage that's been written on the work order, and so we're done. On the other hand, that's an easy way for you to talk to the technician, and just some people just tape it to the front of the dashboard. Some people set it on the dashboard. What I like to see people do is tape it to the center of the dashboard, because sometimes the lot boys will take it out and give it to the service rider, and your note is met for the technician who gets dispatched that car, your car. So just kind of put it in an inconspicuous place with a little piece of tape. So where the technician gets in, he'll see it, because your car is going to a person's going to take it from the service driver from wherever it's at. They're going to take it back to the shop. It's going to be dispatched to a technician. The technician will go get the keys and get the car and pull it into his bay. So the note, if it stays in the car, is the way to do it. So that's the easy way to do it. There's going to be a lot of shop owners. They're going to be mad at me for telling you that. But it's not likely the technician's going to call you unless he needs some help. The other day, we had a technician that called a customer, because the customer says, intermittently, the vent next to the door doesn't blow cold air. So the technician gets in the car, and he drives the car around the block, and in both both front doors and both vents close to the front doors is blowing. So he doesn't know which one to focus on. Is it the passenger side vent that intermittently does and doesn't blow cold? If it doesn't blow cold, is the air volume still there? So is the air there, but it's not cold? And see, those are the kinds of questions the technician will have for you. But on the other hand, if he's well-versed in that particular car, he probably is going to be able to figure it out pretty quick anyway. But anyway, if you want to talk to your technician, write a note down and just scotch tape it to the center console, kind of close to the shifter where his eyes have to see it when he picks up the car and takes it to his bay. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Car repair is not that hard so long as we can have a two-way conversation with the consumer, the customer, the driver. And when you're the person that's having that discussion, it's a good idea if you just the answers to the questions are yes, no, I don't know. And I know the men have a tough time with the I don't know, but the women don't. And that's what makes it really nice, is if we can get a yes, no, or I don't know. And that's really an important part of the car repair stuff. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll take your calls. And if not, we'll continue to jabber about what you can do to more effectively manage the repair of your car. We'll be right back. Well, if you live in Sun City, I've got a good shop there that I'm happy to send you to. Automotive Dynamics has been around since 1982. I've known Chuck since the 60s. So we both kind of grew up in a gas station environment out of high school and during high school. And so Chuck's on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, Automotive Dynamics. Chuck knows the difference between right and wrong. And Chuck does something that's unusual. He doesn't pay his technicians a commission or a percentage of your repair bill because he wants to ensure that they never sell you unnecessary parts or repair. Not most everybody in town is going to go along with that, but by the same token, it is a pretty honorable thing. That virtually ensures that the technician's not going to load your bill with a bunch of stuff that you don't need, but they need money. Because that's fruitless, because he's getting paid an hourly wage and it has nothing to do with your car. So Automotive Dynamics, good place in Sun City. Fred, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I've got a 99 Ford Ranger 4.0, the V6, it's four-wheel drive, and we overfilled the oil, and now we're having trouble with it. It smokes really badly, big white smoke puff, especially if you are sitting there trying to work through it. I know the oil has probably gotten into the exhaust system, so we thought at first that it was just oil in the exhaust pushing out the white smoke, but it seems too consistent for that. We're trying to blow it out before we take it back on the road.
Okay, we'll stop for a minute. Now, there comes a time where I get to ask questions. How much did you just tell me how you overfilled it? Did you put five in and then you forgot, and your son put five more in? Tell me the story.
That is the case exactly.
Okay, all right. It's more likely that you have a bunch of oil in the intake manifold, and you have a whole bunch of oil in the we're sucking it into the engine, which then causes blue smoke out the tail end. So it's more likely that we need to do that. The only way I know that you're going to get this out is head to Tucson, get out on the freeway, and the higher the RPM, the better you'll like it. A higher the RPM, the quicker this will clean up. The higher RPM. So if you're going down the road and you're doing, let's say 1100 RPM at 70 miles an hour. Well, if you take it out of fifth gear and put it in fourth gear, if you take it out of fourth gear and put it into third gear, that'll bring the RPMs up and it'll increase engine vacuum and it'll help, pull that out. You've got a big puddle of oil and the only way to get it out is just do what you're doing. Just keep driving it. But if you just get on the freeway and you just bring the RPMs up, I'd like to see your RPMs up in the 25 to 3500 range. And then just vary the throttle a lot. Throttle up, go back off. Throttle up, back off. Throttle up. I bet you probably wouldn't need to go more than 10 or 12, maybe 15 miles before you saw a substantial decrease in smoke out the tailpipe. And we're assuming it's a blue smoke, yes?
Blueish, whitish. It's the only do is kind of at night when the wind's blowing. So,
okay.
And you can see that there's oil moisture in the at the exhaust pipe too.
Okay. Well, this is no real big deal. When you overfill it, you overfill the crankcase, and then oftentimes we'll flood the valve covers with too much oil, and then the PCV valve will suck the oil into the intake. Well, the intake's supposed to handle air and air only, and there is no heavy air and light air, but there is heavy oil and so forth. So the oil's going to sit in the bottom of the intake, and all we have to do is put enough vacuum on that to suck it out of there and get it out of there. When it starts up, is it really bad, or is it worse when you get driving?
It's worse when you get on it.
Okay, that's just, I ask you that because it tells me how much you have left to get out. Yeah, I got to tell you, we've done that before. We use guns. So we pull the gun off the roof. The technician pulls the gun off the roof, and he squirts 5 quarts of oil in a car. He buttons it all up, and then the lot boy comes by, and he says, I usually put oil in it, so he puts 5 quarts in it, and we have the same mess that you've got in your hands right now. The good news is
that happened to me at a dealership. I bought a brand new Nissan truck, and I took it back my 500 miles. When I got home, there was oil everywhere, and they had overfilled it and just made a mess. I had to have them steam clean it, and it was a mess.
And it happens. It just happens. It's good-hearted people make bad mistakes. And it would have been easy if he had just said to the technician, hey, did you put 5 quarts in it? And he goes, yeah, but let's check the stick real quick first. So there's this process that goes on, but, you know, my industry... My shop, we have 20 bays, and in my shop, we make a mistake a day. I mean, somewhere along the line, we scratch something, we break something. Not too long ago, one of the technicians was replacing some windshield wiper blades, and he lost control of the arm, and it hit the windshield and broke the windshield, and we bought a windshield. It wasn't anything we did on purpose. It's just what happened. So, the other thing you could do, let me think here. Shoot. The other thing you could do is you could introduce, if you took a propane tank and you put about 5 or 6 feet of hose on it and you tucked it into the intake air filter intake, or where the mouth of the motor is breathing, then as you drive down the road, you could richen up the mixture and bring the heat up a little bit if you just add a little propane to it as you're driving down the road. But,
That sounds a little scary. Are there any other ways or anything I should watch out for, like fouled plugs or something?
No, I don't. If you haven't had any fouled plugs by now, you're not going to have any. It's just, you know, now you're sure that this is an overfilled situation. It happened, you know, when it happened, and you know, from that point on, it's been puffing blue smoke. Yes.
Yes, that is the case. I had him drain it, and it overfilled my drain pan. It holds about 4 or 5 quarts.
So. Okay. And when you looked at it, it wouldn't hurt a bit if you were running on the AdMark right now. So
right,
I would probably you know they make these little suck machines that you can stick this tube down the dipstick hole and just suck oil out of the crankcase that way, or you can crawl underneath it with a quick finger and loosen up the drain plug and pull it off and count to 10 and put it back on, and you do that when the engine's cold, of course, and bring it down a little bit, but the best thing you're going to do is to move the oil and get it out of where it's at is higher RPMs. So just go to a higher RPM when you're on the freeway and just downshift until you get into a higher range, perhaps 3 or 4,000 RPM, and that's where you're going to clean it up the fastest.
Great. I knew you'd have great advice. Thank you very much.
Let me know how I did. All right. Thank you very much. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. What would you tell a customer if they wanted a brake job but they wanted to bring in their own pads and rotors?
I'm not going to do that.
Install them?
I'm not going to do that.
No?
No. No, it's filled with all kinds of problems. When the brakes start squealing, then at that particular point, we're going to have an argument with the customers because I'm going to say, it's your pads. And he's going to go, well, you touched them last. And I'm going to say, it's your pads. And he goes, I know, but it didn't squeak before. Well, yeah, because we replaced it with the pads you brought. And so this goes on and on and on and on. And there's just... I mean, I've been working on cars. I started in a gas station in 1969 or 1970. And I've pretty much been working on cars full time since 1979. And, well, I have been 100% of my time has been working on cars, and there's just too many pitfalls. And you know, inevitably between you and me, Bob, and nobody else, no one else can hear us, it's a customer that's never been in before, and you know that it's just that whole relationship is gonna come apart. So yeah, we don't install customers' parts. We're unclear as to whether the quality is there, and then oftentimes the customer wants us to replace parts, but we can't tie the symptom to their parts. So they say the brake pedal fades to the floor. And intermittently, when my wife's sitting at a traffic light, she pushes the brake, she holds it, and it's nice and firm. But then after a few seconds or 10 seconds, then it slowly fades to the floor. So put these brake shoes on. And I'm going to say, those brake shoes are never going to fix that problem. And he doesn't believe me, but he wants me to put the brake shoes on. So those are the kinds of problems that we have. If you have another question, you stay right there, because I'm going to take a break here in 8 seconds. 602-508-0960. The lines are open. 602-508-0960. We'll be back with Bob in a minute. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. There has been a whole bunch going on in the background for the last 4 minutes, because Bob says, do you let customer bring their parts? And I said, no. But my phone is blown up. I have many of my friends have called me, including my wife, and some of them use bad words. So let me clarify something, Bob. Are you ready?
Ready.
Okay. My daughter called and she said, we just did this the other day. So Grandma Moses has been a customer of ours for 21 years. We do all of her service work. Her grandson was driving her car, and the brakes were squealing. So he went and bought her a set of brake pads. A set of brake pads, Dad, with the same box in the same box that we buy. And she says, so when Grandma Moses came in and said, you know, my brakes are squealing, and my grandson said that he wanted to know if I could get these put on, she says, we put them on. She says, now, we also fix the squeak, because we put a hardware kit in there, which is a $12 part. And the hardware has some springs and some pads that keep pads from squealing. So she says, we did that. Then I had another shop owner call and say, it really has to do with how long the customer's been in your clan, what the symptoms are, what the part's quality is, what brand it is, what the circumstances were. So he said that he had a set of valve covers delivered by a young lady who was going to ASU, and her dad had diagnosed him the last time he was here, and he said, here, I'll buy you the gaskets. You find a shop to put them on. Well, the daughter had been doing business with this shop for the last 3 years. She's in a four-year program at ASU. So there are circumstances. I'm going to say I was wrong. There are circumstances that a shop, I can see circumstances where a shop would let the customer bring their own parts. But I think those are about 20% of the time, and the other 80% of the time, the answer is probably going to be no. Does that help?
Got it. I got one other quick question. You know the CVT transmission question? What maintenance do you recommend if somebody has a CVT transmission?
Follow the owner's manual. It was written by the people that made the car, and if they say that they want a full service and filter on it at $100,000, then do it. If they say $60,000, then do it. Do what the manual says to do, and don't let anybody talk you out of the manual. And they're going to say stuff like the manual wasn't written for Arizona. That's just flat bull excrement. That's it. It's not true. That car is sold in all 50 states of the United States and probably a whole bunch of foreign countries. And when the manual says that they want you to change the transmission service between 90 and 100,000 miles or at about 100,000 miles, that means everybody. So that's where we get into a whole lot of disagreements about when you should do it and when you shouldn't. Bob, that's one of the biggest deals we got going right now. Right now, everybody, it's changing the parameters for flushing fuel injectors, cleaning intake manifolds and plenums, cleaning throttle blades, flushing cooling system, flushing brake system, flushing transmissions and transfer cases and differentials. We're all changing those parameters, and we're cutting them in half from what the manual says. And today's fluids on a 10-year-old car might as well be 100 times better than they were 10 years ago. So the manual is always the Bible for your car, and I would tell everybody, no matter what you're told, follow the manual. And it's required miles or months or years.
Yep.
That do it?
don't the CVTs, don't all the shops just take them out and send them to a factory? Nobody really rebuilds the CVTs, do they?
No, there's two or three shops here that rebuild CVTs, but I couldn't very well say that to the gentleman who wanted me to help him because I've not done any research on these shops. I've not looked at their Google reviews. I don't know who the owners are. I'm not going to send him to somebody who I've not vetted before because I think most people that know me, if I'm going to recommend somebody, it's because I know them and I vetted them and I trust them. But no, that's another reason, Bob. I had, I think it was, who was it, Jan? No, it was Julie. I asked Julie to send me an email so that I could call a couple of these guys, and I want to talk to them about this before I send Julie to them. So there's transmission shops out there that will pick up the car, take it, fix it, and bring it back. The problem is that until you get it apart, you don't know how much it's going to cost. So the transmission shop's going to bid it to the shop for $3,000, and the shop's a fool not to bill it to the customer at $4,500, and he can always back away from that. The shop can always come in as a hero at $3,100, but you better give yourself enough, you know, little bit of movement there in case the shop decides that he bids you at $3,000 and then gives you a bill for $4,500 because it needed some more stuff. Those are the pitfalls of owning your own shop today. And hopefully I've answered your questions, and thank you very much for your question. That was a good question. But I intend to help Julie. I just need to make a couple of calls to ask. There's two CVT shops in town, and I don't know that either one of them does the Tucson, and that's what I'm really worried about is the Tucson. The Prius and all those other cars, the Toyotas, those are pieces of cake. I got two or three shops for those, but the Tucson is what bothers me. Anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you have a car question or a car problem, or if you have a dispute at your dinner table between dad and son or husband and wife, how to start the car, how long should you let it run in your driveway and all that kind of stuff, then I'm pretty good at that. Just give me the situation and give me the two sides, and I'll pick one, and then I'll justify it. 602-508-0960. When we talk about good shops in town, Blackwell Automotive is certainly one of them. He's at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom is a good guy. He's really good with the vintage cars as well as your everyday car. So if you've got an old car and a new car, Tom could be your guy. And he's, again, at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends for many, many years. He knows right from wrong. And like all the other shops I tell you about, he knows the difference between right and wrong, and I'm proud to tell you, of all the 30, 40, 50 shops that I recommend, I might get one complaint a year. So I'm pretty proud of those guys. Phil, you're up next.
Mark, I have a Toyota Tundra. Has about 98,000 miles on it. About all I've ever done to it is an oil changes.
Okay.
I should say. As far as preventive maintenance, and I heard last week you were talking about water pumps being changed around 100,000 miles. Should I take it in and have all the fluids changed, differentials, transmission, transfer case, radiator fluid, I mean, everything?
Well, if you do all the fluids, your bill's going to be north of $1,000.
Yeah, I understand that.
But no, because I'm hoping you have a shop that wasn't born yesterday, and he's got.
No,
some...
I would probably take it to Action Auto.
Okay, well then, what they're going to do is they're going to pull the transmission dipstick and smell it and look at it. They're going to say there's nothing wrong with this fluid. It doesn't smell burnt. It doesn't have a bunch of clutch material in it. It's opaque. I can see right through it as I put it on a white paper towel. So no, this transmission fluid's good. Coolant. We use a tester. We'll test the coolant. And it'll tell us if it's too acidic, or it'll tell us if it's not the right concoction to give you the 60 below zero coverage that you may need. So we have different test equipment to do that kind of stuff. In your particular case, I would just probably pick one or two of them and say, would you check the differential fluid and the transmission fluid? Let me know if they smell good, look good, and tell me what you think I should do. And if you think I should change them, then give me a price as well. That's how I'd handle it.
Okay.
100,000 miles is 25 or four times around the equator. We can't lose track of what 100,000 miles is. But I also want to tell you, what year is your Tundra?
2010.
Okay. I also want to tell you that the fluids that you and I grew up with were Fred Flintstone fluids. The new synthetics that we have today are 1,000 times better than what we had in the 60s and the 50s and the 70s. So,
right.
And then you don't, and I'm telling you, you've got coolant, you've got transmission, you've got power steering, you got differential. Some people will talk you into changing the Freon, which I think is a crazy idea, and we don't do that, and I would be very upset if one of my techs said that. So just be careful about that. And on your brake fluid, we have a tester that will tell us what the moisture content is, and then we can look at it. If it looks like really dirty tea, then yes. But if it's got a nice amber color and it passes the test, then no. So that's how I do it.
Okay, so as far as the water pump, like you're saying, it four times around the planet here, so would it be due for a water pump?
No, I wouldn't change the water pump, and not? I'll tell you why. Number one, the water pump, when it goes bad, it'll start weeping a little bit of coolant out of the bottom of the shaft. It'll go on the ground, and you'll see it. And when you see it, then you'll take it in and say, I have a coolant leak, and they say your water pump's leaking, and then you say, fine, go ahead. It's been a long time since anybody's been towed in because the water pump went to heaven. And in every case it gets towed in, it's because the people ignored the growling and the grinding and the fluid leak and the vibration. They ignored all that. So the very first thing, every time you take it in for an oil change, you say, hey, check the weep hole on the water pump. At the very bottom of the water pump, only visible when you're standing underneath it with the car on a hoist, there's a little weep hole. There's a seal behind it and in front of it. If we get water into that middle area because one of the seals failed, then we're going to have coolant coming out of that weep hole.
Correct.
And so I wouldn't do it. I just, if it makes you feel better, go ahead and do it because it's not going to hurt anything. But I don't do that to mine. My Dodge truck's got 146,000 miles on it, and I ain't changing that water pump until it starts leaking or until it starts growling.
I've had the old Jeeps, the old AMC Jeep Wagoneers and all, and those things were notorious for just, when they quit, they quit.
And it used to be that way, but today there's plenty of symptoms, and typically it's a coolant leak, and then it goes to a vibration that you can actually hear and feel within the car.
So I just don't really have to worry about changing all those fluids and just have them checked.
Yes, and ask them to use scientific, scientific ways, litmus paper and compare the cool. You know what you can do yourself is,
I'm 69 years old. I really don't want to do a whole heck of a lot of these vehicles anymore.
If you've been a customer of them,
I haven't.
Okay, if I'm an old timer, you're an old timer. If some old timer came in and said, I don't know about the fluids. You know what I'd do? I'd send him out in the shop and I'd say, hey, come here. Eddie, go through his fluids and show him what new and what he's got looks like, and I'd just walk back in the shop. That's what I would do. I wouldn't just do that. And if you have a relationship, that's a perfectly acceptable thing to do. Now, they also make this really thing that you can print off the internet that you plug in your car and you print this thing and it says your fluid should be this color for your coolant and your this and the this and this. Well, that's not always correct because sometimes the fluids the same fluid will come in a couple of different colors. But what we do then is we take your dipstick on your transmission and we wipe it here, and we take your engine oil, we wipe it here, and then we do this and we wipe it here, and then we take your power steering and we wipe it here, and we say, here, you compare. Pink, pink, yellow, yellow, orange, orange, black, black. It's okay. So this is something the shop, most all of us are regular customers. This is something they just have to say, check the fluids and tell me which one I need to address. We all know the responsibility with that.
Okay. Very good.
All right. Thank you, Phil. Thank you very much. Ron, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I have a 2000 Silverado, and I need some air conditioning work. It's been leaking for a year or so. I would like your recommendation on what I should change. As 150,000 on it.
I'm thinking
new compressor.
Okay, well, where's the leak at?
I believe it's at the compressor.
Okay, Well, you know, it's pretty simple for us to, sometimes we put dye in it and then we use a black light. And so we just wave the black light over. You got two hoses from the compressor. You got the nose of the compressor. You got the back of the compressor that can leak an oil. You got the can of the compressor that can leak oil, leak Freon and oil. Then you got all the connections from the two hoses that leave the compressor, and one goes I'm looking at different things. Yeah. It goes to the.
I'm following what you're saying, but the thing is 23 years old. Would you recommend changing the compressor out?
If it's still working, I wouldn't change it. I would not change it. I would not change it. There's no benefit to changing it now. My truck is 146,000 miles, and I'm not going to change the compressor on it till it starts blowing Freon out the nose of it, or all of a sudden it's got oil all over it because it blew an O-ring in the case, or that kind of stuff. Then I'll do it all at the same time. But and I want to tell you, everybody in my family, my daughter Andy and her husband, my son Alan and his wife, my wife and me, we all have cars north of 100,000 miles, and that is not on any of our radars. The water pumps, the air conditioning compressors, the alternators, the starters, none of that is. It's just, and you know, rarely do we get cars that get towed in with those kinds of problems. Typically, there's going to be symptoms that's going to draw your attention, and then you'll bring it in. So it's not...
Even though it's 23 years old.
Well, no, and I don't care that it's 23 years old. I have a Freightliner, a red big truck that I use to haul my farm equipment back to the shop up to Payson. And it's Clifford the Big Red Dog is what we call it. And it sits more than any other vehicle we have. And I once a year I send it into the shop and I said, give it the eyeball once over, smell all the fluids, do everything we need to do. And last time I went in, he said, we've never done a fuel filter on Clifford. And it's an M11. It's a big, big, big Cummins motor. And I said, you're kidding. He goes, no, we've never done one. And I said, well, I think it's time we do one now. And he goes, okay, that's the only thing we did, a fuel filter. So
okay.
I don't think... Change the question. How many times do you work and spend big dollars on a car because they ignored a stopping point for an oil change or something? Never. It's just the motors that come in that are torched have been overheated, significantly overheated, where they tried to drive another 20 miles after the dash looked like a Christmas tree. And number two, oil. They drove it long after the engine started clattering, long after all the warning lights went off, and they drove it until the whole engine just locked up. Those, we see those, but that's the, I think you'll agree, that's the guy behind the wheel. And, and by the way, women don't tow those cars in, only the guys tow those cars in. So.
Hey, one more question. If the compressor's leaking out of the front, would you change it out, or that's an O-ring deal, right?
Yeah, I know. I'm not gonna. Do you have the long round cylinder one called the A6?
Or no.
R4? Do you have the R4 or the A6? Do you know?
It's 34, right?
Okay. But I don't. I can't. It's 23 years old too, and that's what I'm struggling with. To be honest with you, I'd be really mad at my staff if all of a sudden we started looking into our crystal ball and telling people they needed to replace the compressor because it's just bound to fail sometimes. I would just really object to that. Besides that, the worst that's going to happen is the compressor's going to lock up, it's going to blow the belt off, but all the power steering and the water pump have their own belts of virtually everything out there today. So it's not like you're going to get stuck. All we're going to do is throw the belt on the ground and you're not going to have AC.
Yeah.
So, and of course, depends on how mad your wife is, and if she's on her way to the hairdresser or something like that, that could be a problem. But anyway, Ron, good luck. Thank you very much. That's a great question, folks. There's a comfort zone that I suspect many of you want to be put in, and all I want to tell you as bluntly as I can is we can't help you with that. We don't have crystal balls in our office. We don't have. there's a joke there. Many of you got it. But we don't have the ability to look into the future and tell you what's wrong with your car. If you come in and you say, every time I turn the air conditioning on, there's a squealing that goes on, and I can kind of rev it up, and then the squealing will go away. Oh, I want to hug you. That's what we need to hear. That's what we need to hear. We can find that and fix it. Is it the belt? Is it the compressor? We look at the belt. It looks like a shoelace. And you go, this needs a new belt. So you put a new belt on it. Or if the belt's good and you look at the pressures and the high side is skyrocketing and the low side is sitting there going up as well, well, we need a compressor. So we can diagnose those things, but the comfort zone is just different. Now, here's one that I'll tell you. My wife and I are going to drive to see the grandkids in Maine, and we're going to leave the first of the summertime. I got 100,000 miles on the car, Mark. What do you think I should do? I'm going to say, you're going to leave Arizona in the summertime, and you're going to drive across the country to Maine to visit the grandkids. I need to look at that car. I'm going to look, and anything that's marginable, I'm going to bid the repair on. That's how it works. So in that kind of a situation, I would respond differently. But just to replace it because it's going to fail, we've seen water pumps go a long, long time. We've seen air conditioning compressors and alternators and starters and batteries and stuff like that. It's just not the way it was in the 60s and the 70s and even the 80s. And I would even go so far as to even in the 90s. We're talking about cars in the last 5, 6, 7 years. Let's go to the last 10 years. Let's go back to 2010. We're talking about cars that really, really hold together well. And as long as you're paying attention, if there's symptoms, you'll pick them up. Mark@marksalem.com is my email address. If you ever want to talk to me, then send me an email and give me a phone number I can call you back at. Mark@MarkSalem.com. Drive safely, wear a seatbelt, and if anybody does something nice for you, then toot your horn and wave to them, and maybe you'll make their day.